Welcome back to Coast AM. Richard Serrett coming to you from Coast Toronto affiliate News Talk 1010 In Depth Radio. Say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett, SYRETT. And we'll begin open lines on the wildcard line. And Mike is in Colorado. Mike, welcome. How are you?
Doing this morning.
I'm well. How are you, sir?
Pretty good. So one thing I want to touch bases on is the situation that's going on in Syria and Iraq. I was actually embedded with the Peshmerga, was 70th Command, with a special operations unit under Colonel Tariq Jaffa Ali and under General Ross. And being friends with Dr. Barham Salil, the president of Iraq currently, they, you know, have their hands really full. You know, it's unfortunate because there's different factions that are fighting, you know, numerous foreign, you know, militaries. But I could say this, that, you know, the Peshmerga was very key and effective with the YPG and the YPJ, and personally fighting with them alongside in Kirkuk and up north into Mosul. And, you know, there was a couple years back when I was there that we were fighting when they tried to fire up again in Kirkuk, and it was a massive battle. You know, it's a long haul fight there. And the thing is, you know, now as me as being as you want to call it, retired soldier from the Peshmerga, I can say that, you know, we were outmanned, outgunned, outtrained, outsupplied, and out-intelled. And, you know, we stomped the hell out of the Islamic State and Fallujah, Al-Sad, Tafir, all these different places that were really bad. And I think that, you know, turning our backs on the Kurds, unfortunately, and a lot of people are like, well, we need to get out of this long war, that's fine. But, you know, some of my commanders are in the SDF. And they were only given a couple hours notice when the U.S. was pulling out. And it's unfortunate because U.S. military didn't know what was going on until the last minute they were there, the commanders. And, you know, and it opens up a giant vacuum hole that happens there in Syria, which will, in fact, happen in Iraq also. You know, you have the Talibanis and the Barzanis and everybody trying to keep everything together. And then Dr. Barham in Baghdad. And the problem is that, you know, a lot of the Kurds, unfortunately, you know, they feel betrayed. You know, within a couple hours, the United States had a 98% approval rating. And then when they did what they did in Syria, it went down to almost like 2-3% approval rating. You know, and it affects the U.S. soldiers over there, which is not their fault because they're following their commands from their higher-ups. But the thing I can say is that, you know, the only allies the United States has in the Middle East in that area, in all honesty, is the Kurds and Israel. That's it. You know, the Kurds are very pro-Israel and very pro-American. So when you're leaving them to, as General Maslom said, you're leaving us to be slaughtered, it's a true fact. You know, and this is an unfortunate thing that now U.S. soldiers are going to have to go back in and help out with, you know. And it's very unfortunate for American soldiers as well as the allies that are there, you know. And it's deafening of how bad, you know, society, you know, looks at it. It's like, well, these are long, outdrawn wars. I agree. Get out while you can, but at least give your allies a chance to fight, you know, and that's something that the ball was massively dropped there.
Right. The withdrawal should have been handled better. I don't know if you had an opportunity to listen to retired Major General Dana Pittard, who
yes.
was commander of the multinational force.
Yes. Yeah, and I respect that man very much. Very intelligent.
I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on these remote strike cells, and maybe that is the way to maintain support for the Kurds,
and
without putting ever again, hopefully, you never say never, but putting boots on the ground in there. I mean, that this should be the painful lesson, is that once you go in. And I think it was a mistake to go in. Then,
yes.
You know, getting out is going to be nigh on impossible. So maybe this should has to be a painful lesson. Yes,
absolutely. You know, and I think there's different avenues that the U.S. could approach it, you know. And it's unfortunate because, you know, the Kurds have been betrayed so many times. There was, you know, numerous history of them being betrayed. But they still stand with the United States. You know, they love Americans. They love the way of life. But I think in reality, you know, it was like during the height of the war. I was there during 2015 all the way up to 2018. I trained with the Kurds, was in Special Operations through 70 Command, Ministry of Peshmerga. And the thing is that what really shocks me is that majority of the weapons that were sent to Baghdad when Maliki was in charge, 50% of the weapons and the supplies and everything was supposed to go to the Peshmerga. They never got any of that. They got like 2% of it. And the unfortunate thing is the money was sent to pay the Peshmerga. Let me put it this way. In the Peshmerga, they didn't get paid for almost 9 months to almost 18 months. They didn't get paid during the height of the war, and they still kept fighting. You know, and it's like, to me, arm the Kurds, give them what they need, give them the training. I mean, you could do it in Erbil. You can do it in Soleimani. Unfortunately, you can't do it in Kirkuk no more because Iran took that over. And give them the weapons, give them the training, give them exactly the proper go-to, because I'm sorry, and it may sound, you know, one-sided, but the Afghan army, the AA, they're impossible to train. The Kurds are not. I mean, the word Peshmerga means those who face death. So we're not afraid to fight. Just give them the weapons, give them supplies, give them the intel, and let them go fight the war. They'll win. I mean, in Baghdad, when Maliki was in charge, when Fallujah got taken over, I mean, it took the Iraqi army thousands and thousands of men and weapons and supplies, and they could not liberate Fallujah. They called the Peshmerga. We went in there, and in hours, we liberated the entire city and gave it back to the Iraqi army. You have never seen a Peshmergan soldier or SDF, YPG, YPJ running away in their underwear and leaving everything behind. You did with the IA, with the Iraqi army. So, you know, you should go with the better hand, you know, the better option. Kurds will fight for America. They will die for America. I mean, they're very pro-American. But to leave them the way they did, I agree. It's you can't get back into the hot water, but give them the chance to at least make it great. Because, I mean, if you look in Rojava, the Rojava region, okay, the SDF, Syrian Democratic Forces, they literally, women were equal as men. Everybody, Christian, Jew, Muslim, whatever you were, you had an equal say-so as everybody else. And then Erdogan comes in there and completely destroyed that, you know, and it's just, it's an unfortunate event. And, you know, and then now Trump's standing there going, well, we're going to protect the oil, we're going to guard the oil, we're going to sell the oil. To me, it's he sold the Kurds out, and American lives have died. I mean, there's been Delta Force, Navy SEALs, Army, everybody has died there for absolutely nothing. Which is sad.
It's as is so often the case. Mike, exactly. Thanks for the call and thank you for your service.
Absolutely. Thank you. You have a good day. Bye-bye.
You too. All right. Let's say hi to Blair in Sedona, Arizona. Blair, good morning. Welcome to Coast AM.
Good morning, Richard. Over 40 years ago, I drove up to Yukon Territory via the Fraser River Gorge in British Columbia and then took the Alcan Highway, the Alaska Highway, part paved, part gravel, part dirt. And I spent 5 weeks up in an area, Yukon, the size of California and Pennsylvania, where moose and brown bear outnumbered humans at that point. Matter of fact, when I was in Whitehorse, the territorial capital, half the population of Yukon at that time was 150,000, was 75,000. I have a question to you as a Canadian. What is going on population, economy, and climate-wise in the Northwest Territories and Yukon currently?
What do you mean climate-wise?
Well, are you getting permafrost melting? I'm hearing reports about that in Northwest Territories. I just wanted to know, since you live up there, if you could confirm that.
Up there? That's several thousand miles away. I don't live up there. I've never been there, actually. The population, I think Northwest Territories is less than 50,000, and the Yukon is less than 40,000. And we really need to develop the North. We need infrastructure. We need, I mean, I know people are saying, wait a minute, it's so pristine. It's so beautiful. You know, we have all of this land up there, and 90% of our population is distributed along a thin little ribbon within 100 miles of the U.S. border. 90% of our population. It's just not sustainable for a country to distribute its population that way. We need to develop the North. We need highways. We need roads. We need infrastructure. And I don't think it'll happen in my lifetime, unfortunately. But I would love to see, you know, larger population centers in not only in the territories, but in places like Northern Ontario, You know, you get to a certain distance up there, there are no roads. The roads just simply stop. And so we have, you know, just vast, vast tracts of land, unimaginably large swaths of land that are just undeveloped and unutilized. And, you know, resources and so forth just being squandered. It's a shame. It's a shame. As for the permafrost, I don't know. You know, I don't want to get into necessarily a debate about global warming, but I think suffice to say I'm on record. I don't believe in man-made global warming. But you know, maybe we'll save that one for another time. All right, let's say hi to Sean is in Mansfield, Ohio. Sean, good morning. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Hello, I just wanted to comment on something that I think is reflected in the Hitlerian advocacy and technique of the big lie. If you tell a lie that's big enough and brazen enough, the ordinary people, he said, and Goebbels said that they'll believe it because they'll not believe that anybody could be that bold and brazen. And because the little people tell the little lies all the time, but they can't conceive of their government perpetrating bold, brazen lies. And I think that's what we're hearing now, very much about ISIS. And there's some Freedom of Information Act release of Defense Intelligence Agency documents by the Judicial Watch. And this is a kind of a conservative organization, but they forced these documents. And one of them could be entitled Dirty Open Secret. ISIS created and supports, U.S. created and supports ISIS. And I think that's something that we've got to realize finally at this time, that the United States for years now has been torturing and just racking and ruining into a Mad Max desolation, a decent sectarian, non-sectarian, secular government that had brought all of the different sects together in that country and now are being completely bled and destroyed by the United States support for these Al-Qaeda ISIS terrorists. And that's this dirty open secret. I think you can find it in some of the writings of a former CIA types with the Veterans Intelligence for Professional Sanity, but they are totally censored from any of the corporate media in this country. And people like Michael Flynn, as a matter of fact, General Michael Flynn, because he broke the news about this himself on a foreign television station and said, yes, the United States has been supporting ISIS to attack countries, in effect, that actually hate ISIS, have been fighting ISIS, that whether it's even Iraq or Syria and Libya, and using it to attack the countries, the very countries that hate and have been exterminating ISIS from their countries. And I think it's an ugly tactic. And there's some people that have are mentioned in an article called Gladio Crimes of the U.S. Empire, Gladio Crimes of the U.S. Empire, which brings out some of these dirty secrets that will never be told by the corporate CIA-infiltrated media, such as that we've been supporting ISIS against decent governments that have been killing and exterminating ISIS, and we've been supporting Nazis, not only after the Second World War when we brought thousands of Nazi war criminals into the CIA and NATO, but right now in Ukraine. We overthrew that democratically elected government in 2014 and have been supporting actual Hitler-loving neo-Nazis in the main positions within that
Okay,
regime.
Sean, I'm running up against the break here in a few moments. I want to work in some other callers, but you got it said, and I would say that there's a great deal of truth to that. This whole doctrine of the enemy of my enemy is my friend, and we've made you know, deals with the devil, you know, whether it was the Soviets and the communists versus the Nazis in the Second World War. Yeah, there's a long history of that. And geopolitics is a dirty, dirty game. And it's something that we do have to confront. There's no question about it. We have to come to terms with that. And hopefully, You know, once it's out in the open, and we can have serious adult conversations about, you know, whether we want to keep repeating these same mistakes. What does Einstein say? The definition of insanity is when you keep, you know, making the doing the same things over and over and over again, and expecting a different result. So we get what we deserve, I suppose. Let's say if I let's see if we can squeeze in. Let's see, Gordon in Lakeland, Florida. Gordon, welcome.
Long time no see, Richard. Thanks for taking my call. Last night, Chris, the scientist that was had the Buckyball, remember?
Yes.
He challenged the listeners to see if they could come up with a way to lengthen lifespan better than his. And the Buckyball, as you remember, is an antioxidant and anti-inflammatory. And he mentioned reduction of calories, which, of course, cleanses the body.
Yes.
But remember in the Bible times, so I think I can beat him. In the Bible times, people lived to be 600, 700, 800 years old. And geologists tell us that the barometric pressure back then was about 2 or 3 atmospheres, about 2 or 3 times what it is. And the reason that I think that this links in the lifespan, the connection there, is that if you get into a barometric pressure, a Benz chamber coming up, you know, you come up from, you dive, you have to come up
right.
to pre-water. You have a cut. The cuts get healed real quick. And that's just for being in there for a little bit. And so the bottom line is there's a whole bunch of factors involved for lengthening your life, eating, sleeping, exercising, stress, getting rid of toxic waste is a chief thing so the body can reproduce. But air is something that's even more important than food and water. And if you could have the barometric pressure like double or triple all your life, I think you could live to be 700 or 800 years old. So I think I met the guy's challenge. And I can't prove it, but I think that the evidence, you can Google this and check it out. Geologists will tell you the barometric pressure was 2 or 3, sometimes 5 times. I don't know what happened millions of years before, but I'm just talking within the last several
right,
thousand.
Right.
What do you think about that?
Well, so you're talking about what do you call those? Hyperbolic chambers?
Hyperbaric.
Hyperbaric chambers, right. Hyperbaric
yeah.
chambers. Didn't Michael Jackson sleep in one of those at night?
Well, he was rich. I'm jealous of the guy. I'm jealous of the guy.
I remember oxygen bars used to be all the rage about 10, 15 years ago, and it was sort of the same idea, but you don't see those anymore. I don't know. Something to consider, Gordon. We need a long-term human study, and why don't you volunteer?
I was just saying, a chemist, and, you know, I got my paper published, but I'm not going to give the link out because I'm not allowed. I'm not going to go off topic. I'll do what the call screener said because other people have to get their turn, and you guys give me too much of a turn. And I just love you guys so much.
Gordon, thank you for that. A hyperbaric chamber for dramatic life extension. Fascinating. Fascinating. Yeah, whatever happened to oxygen bars? Do you remember those? Let's see. Do we have time? I don't think we have time for, no. We'll get to more calls when we come back. Coast to Coast AM, Richard Serrett, coming to you coast from Coast's Toronto affiliate, News Talk 1010, In-Depth Radio. Stay with us. We're going to go right to the phones, and west of the Rockies, Don is in Kalispell, Montana. Don, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure.
One quick comment. The Yukon and the Northwest Territories are beautiful. I used to drive it all the time.
Yes, I hear. Anyway, I'd love to get up there someday.
Oh, you should. It's beautiful. they don't know if you'll know the answer. I don't know the answer. But do you know which state or even province in Canada that has the most Sasquatch sightings?
As a matter of fact, I do. this came up recently, not on this program, on one of my podcasts, actually. And so I was doing a little research, and it's Washington State, by far and away, has the most Bigfoot sightings. Places, I think it's called Okanagan County. There's
mm-hmm.
Okanagan Valley in British Columbia, but there's Okanagan County in yeah. Washington, and that seems to be the Blue Mountains and Ape Canyon, all in Okanagan County. That seems to be Sasquatch Central, but they have far and away the most. And then I think after Washington is California.
Wow.
And then surprisingly, it's places like Pennsylvania, Michigan, New York, Ohio.
Ohio.
yeah, and Montana, where you're from, doesn't make it on the list. I would have thought that Montana would have had its fair share, but no.
We're cold. They don't like it.
Why do you ask? Why do you ask that, Donna? Are you looking for?
I'm trying times buying some land up in the Cascades in Washington to be closer to my grandchildren, and I've gone, oh, it can't be Washington.
Well, there it is. You hit the jackpot.
I get all the Sasquatch, Bigfoot. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Don. If you see one, call me.
I will take pictures too.
Yes. It'll be all blurry, of course. Who was that? Was it Mitch Hedberg, that comedian, who said, "I think Bigfoot actually just he's blurry. That's the way they look. They're just blurry creatures." We miss Mitch, don't we? Let's say hi to Annie, who is in the great state of Alabama. Hello, Annie. Welcome to Coast. Good morning. Are you there, Annie? As Annie, I think Annie dropped off. Did a Bigfoot get Annie? I don't know. Not a lot of Sasquatch sightings in Alabama. I could be wrong. All right. So let's go to Michael in Virginia Beach. Hey, Michael.
Hi. Thank you so much, Richard, for taking my call.
My pleasure.
Your first caller tonight, Mike, I didn't get what state he was from. He was tremendous. I think he provided more pertinent, up-to-date information than General Batard. This is critical. He's right. The Kurds have been betrayed. And I'm thinking about tomorrow night's guest talking about Armageddon and how it ties into your conversation with General Batard tonight. I have never heard in either a pulpit preacher or a media preacher, television type, radio type, I've never heard them discuss what they think the world is going to be like in the first 10, 20, 50, 75 years of Christ's reign on earth. I've never heard them talk about what we are to do politically as Christians and as Jews who believe both the Old Testament and New Testament. I've never heard them say what we should be doing now. I mean, we have betrayed the Christians in the Middle East, whom Jay Sekulow has cried about for years in two of his books, The Unholy Alliance and The Rise of ISIS. But now that he is working for the president who just betrayed the Christians of the Middle East, we don't hear him talking about these issues anymore. So when we look at the book of Daniel and we are told that the holy people, the Christians, the believers, the saints, will be betrayed at the time of the end, I think we're seeing that in the Christian right followers of the likes of Jay Sekulow, Pat Robertson, that whole group, which seems to be in this for the money and not for any long-lasting effect to prepare the world for the eternal rule of Jesus Christ.
All right, Michael, thank you for your call. I've got absolutely nothing to add to that. I have no idea how we are supposed to prepare politically, for Jesus' 1,000 rule, 1,000-year rule on Earth. Politics would be the furthest thing from my mind at that point. I think it would be the furthest thing from his mind as well. All right, Mark is in Prior Lake, Minnesota. Mark, welcome to Coast. How are you?
I'm doing well. Can you hear me?
I can, loud and clear, sir. Where is Prior Lake, Minnesota?
Yes. It's a little cold here this morning.
I'll bet.
Oh, I think we're hanging around probably 16, 14 degrees, somewhere in there.
All right. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to call up and give a shout-out to all our veterans, being it is officially Veterans Day.
Yes,
and,
indeed.
I'd like to include the first responders in that.
Absolutely.
Without these people, where would we be? You know, the freedoms that we enjoy in this country that somehow seem to be belittled by certain leaning people. That bothers me. I proudly fly my flag. I will be finding a veteran at probably a local, American Legion or a VF, and I've done this every year for, I don't know how long. And I'll walk in the room and I'll know when I see him, that's the guy. And go find out his story. And they are very willing to talk, especially the World War II vets. They're really opening up on what they went through.
Well,
and,
there's not many of them left, are
it's
there?
It's quite fascinating.
Not many of them left.
No. I met one last year. I knew right away when I walked in, this is the guy I'm talking to. He had his sailor's suit on, the very suit that he wore during the war, and it fit him to a T, and he was sharp. He was patriotic. He was gentlemanly. He was an awesome soul. And we had a good two-hour conversation, and it's something I'll never forget.
I'm sure he was so appreciative
he had a
receptive ear.
Absolutely. Matter of fact, by the time it was done, there was probably 6-8 people sitting around listening and talking, and it was quite a eye-opening experience.
Well, God bless you. God bless you for that. That's a wonderful thing that you did. Thank you for that. And let's see who else. Let's give a shout out to all our veterans, shall we? Jersey Doug, east of the Rockies somewhere. I'm not sure where you're calling from, Jersey, but you're on, my friend.
Yeah, I'm in just about central New Jersey.
All right.
I had a question, but. You had made a comment, so it kind of changed my, I'm going to make more of a statement than a question. When you had made that comment there about Mitch and, missing him. And I'll tell you what, he was a great talent. He went way too soon. And there wasn't a time, I was fortunate enough to see him live a couple of times up here in the Poconos. And it just goes to show that, you don't have to be a rock star or something like that, or even a guy in the gutter to, get involved with these drugs that are taking a lot of lives. And I want people to know that there is help out there. I had two of my buddies, really good friends. One was an ex-vet, and another one was just a fella down on his luck, and they both got mixed up with that stuff really, really bad. And I managed to get them... to start going to meetings and whatnot, and it seemed to help quite a bit. And I just want to let the people know there's help out there. If they're serious and they want to get themselves clean, all they have to do is ask. They could call their local police department. They could call the local hospital, and they will, immediately get something going for you. And I just wanted to say that in remembrance of old Mitch Hedberg.
Mitch Hedberg, that's how he went. Was it a heroin overdose?
Yes, I believe it was.
Oh, how tragic. You know, sometimes the greatest minds, and he had a great mind, stand-up comedians are so, my gosh, they just have amazing minds, the way they think of the world and so forth. They're so talented and intelligent stand-up comedians, but often also so tortured. You know, you think of people like Lenny Bruce and... Sam Kinison, although Sam Kinison died after a car accident, but many of them are really tortured. They're responsible for so much laughter, but personally, their lives are so tragic. You also, Jersey Doug, it says here you wanted to talk about the any news about the rover. I'm assuming you mean the Curiosity rover.
Right. I was told that they occasionally are still receiving signals. Not much data, but signals that it's still moving because of the locations when the signals did come back to them, that they were a distance apart.
Yeah, the Curiosity rover just captured some photographs of the the Martian landscape, I guess, if you will, and the horizon, and sent those back a couple of days ago. So yeah, the Curiosity is still snapping some selfies and sending those our way.
Beautiful. Beautiful. So I got that in, and I got my question answered in the same.
Fantastic.
I appreciate you and all the listeners. Have a great night.
All right. And we appreciate the call. Jersey Doug, east of the Rockies. All right. We have just about enough time for one or two more calls. And I think my screener is on the fritz here, so I don't know if we've got anyone waiting. Well, then let me just remind you once again that you want to be joining George Norrie again tonight, this morning, when he's back in the air chair. And again, George will be doing his special tribute to our veterans, along with Danyon Brinkley. And they're going to discuss the state of our veterans, what needs to be done to better honor those who have served. In the second half, financial analyst H. Richard Austin has dissected the book of Revelations from its original Greek text, as well as the history and commentary related to the document. And one of his most unique observations is that the three key statements that were disclosed at Fatima, remember the three secrets of Fatima, the third one was never entirely disclosed, we're told. Anyway, this disclosure will clarify the references to Armageddon in the book of Revelations. All right. You know, we've got enough time if you want to call in and if you have a shout out to a veteran, sort of in an anticipation of tonight's show. It's never too early to get on board and say a special hello to our veterans. And my father would be, let's see, in February he would have been 97. He passed away a long time ago, 1986. Too soon, he was in his early 60s. Never got to enjoy retirement. And I remember his stories from the Second World War. He didn't talk a lot about it. Probably he thought I was too young. He wanted to shield me from that. The things that he must have seen and endured, but he never really talked about it. Once in a while, my older brother and I would get him talking a little bit about it. And he was a tank gunner with Fort Garry Horse, which was an armored division, artillery, I guess, really, out of Winnipeg. That's what they used to call Winnipeg, Fort Garry Horse. And he helped liberate Holland. And once in a while, he'd tell us some stories about the liberation of Holland. All right, we have, is it Ray on the line? Ray, you're on. Not sure where you're calling from, but go ahead.
I'm calling from Tennessee.
Ah, the Volunteer State.
Yeah. I am not a veteran, but I respect the veterans very much. I appreciate everything that they have done. I have had a lot of family that were veterans, and many of them gave their lives for what we have, and I appreciate them so, so very much.
And is there a veteran in your family? Is there a veteran in your family who maybe is no longer with us that you want to mention?
Well, I had an uncle that was a veteran and served World War II in the German and the European theater.
Wow, he served in both theaters.
Yeah, he served in the European theater, yes.
All right.
And he was very much an interesting person.
Well, wherever he is, we take off our hat, we put our hand over our heart, and we say thank you.
Yes, we do.
All right, Ray, thank you for that.
Richard, thank you, Richard, and I appreciate you taking my call.
My pleasure. All right, well, that's a wrap. For George Norrie, George Knapp, Lisa Lyon, Stephanie Smith, Tom Danheiser, Dan Galanti, Michael Cozio, Donna Walker, Greg Bishop, and here in Toronto, Mike Bendixson, Patrick O'Neill, and in Brantford, Ontario, Scott Guitar Flicks, I'm Richard Serrett. Thank you for your ears and your voices, your beautiful voices. I'll talk to you next November the 29th. That's a Friday. Until then, so long for now.